This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
On the program today, businesses big and small, shows on Broadway back on stage, and a quick trip to Hawaii. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Tuesday today, the 11th day of May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Let us stipulate at the outset here that the promising signs in this economy dominate. Vaccinations, bars and restaurants and arts venues and schools keep opening. The Labor Department said this morning in what's known as the JOLTS report, that's for job openings and labor turnover, it said there are 8.1 million jobs available in March. There were. That is a record high. Consumer spending's pretty strong. Our confidence is knocking on the door of where it was in the before times. However, comma, one cannot ignore small businesses. And the Small Business Optimism Index from the National Federation of Independent Businesses did show a teensy little uptick in April, but it is still pretty depressed compared to a year ago. Lots of stress with small business owners reporting labor shortages and rising costs. So with all of that, as preface, Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman gets us going.
The NFIB describes small business owners' expectations as surprisingly glum.
They're really very pessimistic about the future.
NFIB chief economist Bill Dunkelberg says 44% of owners, a record high, report they can't hire workers to fill open positions.
They're raising worker compensation bonuses, too. They'll offer you $50 to take an interview or $1,000 to show up for the job that a few days ago you agreed you would take.
And it might work, says Linda Barrington at Cornell's Institute for Compensation Studies.
MBAs go out, you know, what's the signing bonus? Not things we've typically had in lower paid jobs.
But she says it does make sense.
If it's a lump sum that you pay them to get in the door and you're not locked in, it's very hard to reduce wages once you've started paying someone at a certain level.
For workers still tied to home by childcare or health concerns, Barrington's doubtful a three- or four-figure one-time bonus will get them back to work. But for someone who's on the fence,
it can have a tipping point. If you're thinking about, do I enter the labor market? If there's a signing bonus now, it's a sure thing you'll get it. You don't know that you will still get a signing bonus in 3 months.
But many small businesses are likely to be outbid for scarce workers, says Joe Bruzuelas at consulting firm RSM, by bigger firms.
Mid-sized companies tend to pay the median average wage around $60,000, right? Small companies don't do that.
The food-to-home company Tovala will be hiring 100 new workers for its new warehouse near Salt Lake City in the fall. COO Taryn Aronson says that'll be a challenge. What will they offer?
Competitive wages for the local market. We do invest in health benefits, in holiday pay. All of our full-time employees are granted stock options.
The kinds of benefits small businesses can be hard-pressed to match. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
One of the business lessons of this pandemic has been that you gotta adapt, even or maybe especially when things look real bad. And in that category, one finds commercial landlords. Retail sales tanked, their tenants couldn't pay rent. And that, for Simon Property Group, which owns a bunch of shopping malls and some distressed retailers, well, that was a business opportunity. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra explains.
When shoppers stopped coming last year and stores started missing rent payments, mall landlords had a choice. They could kick the retailers out. Not ideal. Douglas Bregman is a real estate lawyer in Bethesda, Maryland.
The landlords have a dark space in their shopping centers, and that's just bad.
Or they could sue their tenants for rent, but he says that's often a dead end. Simon Property Group decided to make some deals instead. Now, a somewhat common practice in commercial real estate is to base the rent, at least partly, on a retailer's sales.
It's not all sales. It's sales above what's called a break point.
The retailer pays a minimum rent, and then if its sales hit that break point, say $1 million, it gives the landlord a cut, a percentage.
You know, typically in the neighborhood of, say, 7%.
Over the past year, Simon agreed to lower many retailers' base rent if they agreed to lower that break point. David Auerbach is an institutional trader with World Equity Group. He says Simon was essentially saying,
we're betting on you to recover, but because we're giving you this little lifeline, when you hit your certain level, we're going to be coming with our purse open, expecting our share of it as well.
It means that as the economy recovers and retailers see their sales increase, Simon could see a big payout. It's been tying its fate to its tenants.
I'll take it a step further. It's tying its fate to the recovery of the entire industry.
And to consumers. If you think about it, Simon has been making this bet in another way. During the pandemic, its investment group has snapped up several distressed retailers, including Brooks Brothers, Lucky Brand Jeans, and now Eddie Bauer. I'm Mary Elsegarra for Marketplace.
Retail sales, by the way, coming to us on Friday. We'll get some insights into what Marielle was talking about. Gasoline today, just because it's in the news after the pipeline attack. $2.98.5 a gallon on average, up a bit more than 2 cents since yesterday. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm, by the way, said today that Colonial figures it'll be back up and running maybe by the end of the week. Also, and don't forget, it's going to take a while for all the respective distillates to get from refineries down in Texas all the way up the East Coast where those pipelines run. On Wall Street this Tuesday, traders, they had a little agita, a little tsoris. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. There was big news from Broadway today. Hamilton, Wicked, and The Lion King all announced the curtain is going up on September 14th. Those shows make some of the biggest box office on Broadway, so this is pretty solid news that the theater industry is back after a year plus. So we have got Neva Price back on the phone. She is a Tony Award-winning producer. She's got a show of her own coming back as well, Jagged Little Pill, it is called. Hey, Eva, how are you?
I'm pretty good.
I imagine so. Given the news of the day, right? The big three are getting going and you are getting going. I imagine you must be honestly just be over the moon.
I mean, can you hear it? There's like a pep in my step. There's a little glimmer in my eye. I feel optimistic. I feel gratitude. I feel anxious. I feel scared, but yeah. I feel excited.
I was just going to say, you must be a little nervous too, right? Because there's a lot that you have to get done between now and the 14th of September.
Yeah. Jagged Little Pill's opening October 21st. Right. Right. So I personally have a little more time, but it's like relaunching, Kai. It's the beginning. It's getting everyone back to rehearsal, creating a marketing strategy, making sure the technical aspects are still in good shape and that we're running safely in the theater.
There is a certain amount of if you build it, will they come, right? Because the thing you got to have is bottoms in the seats in the theaters. And that has to be an unknown for you.
Absolutely. We know that tourism is going to be down this entire year, never mind this fall. We know that international tourism is certainly going to take quite a while to come back. Tourism's two-thirds of the Broadway audience, depending on your show. And that's scary. You also have a group of people, myself included, that is wondering what it's going to be like to be in a room with strangers again. There's a lot of things to relearn.
One of the things we learned out of the jobs report this past Friday was that some people are just, they're using this, the pandemic, as an opportunity to regear themselves and maybe do something else. Do you have people not coming back who've said to you, yeah, I'd love to be in your show, but I spent the last year doing X, Y, Z, and I want to keep doing that?
Yeah, we don't know yet. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. I certainly have heard about other friend shows and other colleagues that have left the business entirely. Broadway's going to come back, but it also needs to come forward. It has to change. It has to be more equitable, more inclusive. It has to understand that the people both in the seats and the people backstage and on the stage have been through an unbelievable experience. And we have to give all we can in terms of space and support and change so that they're comfortable and they're happy to be there. And we won't know all the answers to any of this until we start engaging with everyone and put our changes in place, both as a show and as an industry in general, to make sure that people feel safe.
So let's talk about that industry for a second. Broadway is Broadway, of course, and the Great White Way and all that. But you, I think, are launching a touring production of Oklahoma, right? Your prior show. That means you're rolling a whole different set of dice, right? With mobility and all of that stuff.
Yeah. Oklahoma's set to launch in November, and we're going to be on tour for nearly a year. And we have a lot to figure out with that show, too. We have to move city to city. We have to move a company every 2 weeks. Mm. We're discovering what that looks like, both from a health and safety protocol perspective, but also from a federal and state guideline perspective. And we're learning as we go.
Are you surprised that you made it? Because, look, when we talked early on, you, who is not your affect is up, not down, you were way down back in March and April of last year. You surprised we got here?
I was pretty down. I think within that sadness, I still felt optimistic that the light that I hoped was at the end of this tunnel was not an oncoming freight train, but rather a real light. I didn't know who I'd be when we got here. I didn't know if I'd actually feel this excited and optimistic. That might change tomorrow. That might change in 3 months.
Yeah.
But Broadway has persevered for so many decades. I knew we would again.
It's interesting. It occurs to me your emotional roller coaster is not over by a long shot.
As someone said to me the other day, I believe a tsunami is coming for us.
Yeah.
And what I said to them is, and then there will be aftershock after aftershock. And I'm, as Stephen Sondheim said in Into the Woods, excited and scared.
Into the woods. Man, that's a show. Ava Price, let's see. Jagged Little Pill coming in October and Oklahoma. On tour in November. Ava, thanks a lot. It's good to talk to you again.
It's great to talk to you, Kai. Take care.
The latest reading on inflation in this economy will be upon us tomorrow morning, the Consumer Price Index. A reminder here that it's going to be a little misleading on a year-over-year basis because last year was, well, we all know what last year was, right? But the fact is, consumer prices are going up, in no small part because commodity prices are rising, too. Sabri talked about copper yesterday. Today we're talking food. Raw food inputs, wheat and corn and soybeans, are getting pricier. And as Marketplace's Justin Ho reports, those prices are going to play out for consumers downstream.
One big reason why the price of corn is up 50% this year is because of a different pandemic. African swine fever crippled pork production in China, which is now trying to buy up corn to restore its pig population.
So China has turned to U.S. corn, and that drives prices in the United States.
That's Ag Professor Daniel Sumner at UC Davis. He says American farmers have been growing more corn to meet demand, so they have less room for other crops.
Corn takes land away from wheat. Well, that reduces wheat supply, and you increase the price of wheat as a consequence.
Animals that eat this pricier grain are now costing more per head, says Glenn Tonzer, who teaches agricultural economics at Kansas State University. He says that's driving up the price of pork, beef, and also chicken, which people have been eating more and more of throughout the pandemic.
So in reality, you got strong meat demands pulling prices up, and you have higher cost of production that are pushing them up, and it's both of those that are leading to your higher chicken prices.
Tonzer says those prices are being felt by restaurants and grocery stores. At Hawaii Supermarket near Los Angeles, manager Chris Duong says his chicken suppliers are charging 10 to 15% more for the chickens he buys.
That's pretty big. Meat prices usually don't fluctuate that much.
He says beef and pork have been getting more expensive too. Duong says independent grocery stores like his operate on slim margins, so he has little choice but to pass the higher prices on to consumers.
You know, in times like these when everything's going up, all the costs are going up, we kind of have to.
Duong says that means charging a dollar more for every whole chicken he sells. That dollar is roughly his entire profit margin. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Well, let's see. Tomorrow morning, you need your business and economic news? How about David Brancaccio and the gang on the Marketplace Morning Report? Check them out. Coming up.
I don't like to look at those numbers.
Yeah, well, like it or not, man, we got to do them. So let's do the numbers. You know, you throw them off. You say the wrong thing and who knows what happens. Dow Industrials down 473 points today, 1.3%, closed at 34,269. NASDAQ off 12 points, less than a 10%, ended at 13,389. The S&P 500 shed 36 points, 0.8%. 41 and 52. Tesla slowed 1.8% today after Reuters reported it has put plans to expand its Shanghai factory on hold because of uncertainty caused by U.S.-China tensions. Some traditional automakers off as well. Ford down 1.1%. GM gave back 2.9%. Automakers are among many still struggling with that global shortage of microprocessor chips, and so some chip makers have formed a new group to lobby the government for subsidies. Among them, Advanced Micro Devices, AMD, up 1.1% today. NVIDIA, which grew 0.2%. Intel down 1.6%. Upmarket mall operator Simon Property Group, Marielle was telling us about them, moved up 3.2%. Posted better than expected quarterly results today. Raised its earning forecast as well. You're listening to Marketplace. Hey there, and thank you for being a dedicated listener. Now I'm hoping I can count on you as a supporter. Donations from people like you keep Marketplace going. And when you donate today, you can get our limited edition Marketplace Summer Tote Bag as a thank you gift. Honestly, it's a summer tote bag. It's sturdy. It's got a cool design from an artist who is a fan of the show. Don't miss out. Step up and give today at marketplace.org/donate. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. On an admittedly not exhaustive list of notable modern financial conveniences, in reverse chronological order, I think, you've got Venmo and its peer-to-peer payment systems, ATMs, of course, and then, for our purposes today, we come to autopay. It's great, but you got to be on the ball. Auto payments you don't want to autopay anymore got to be stopped in advance, and you can lose track of who you're paying pretty easily. Can you name, by the way, all the streaming services you use and are paying for? But the trade-offs can be pretty good. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is on the FinTech beat today.
The thing about autopay is it's just so convenient. You can use it to cover just about any kind of bill, like the streaming services you have.
We have HBO Max, we have Discovery Plus, we have Disney Plus.
Amy Wilder is a consultant in Seattle. Like a lot of us, she uses autopay for almost everything.
Spotify, Pandora, Amazon Music, Apple Music.
Wilder says she first tried automatic payments in 2014 for the mortgage. She liked not having to worry about missing a payment and dinging her credit score. It worked really well.
And so I felt comfortable with that. And then it just kind of ballooned from there.
It certainly did. Wilder likes to read while listening to Spotify, so she autopays for
Washington Post, NPR, The Guardian, The New York Times. I think that's it.
But autopay was around long before Amy Wilder discovered it. Its roots go back to the 1970s and the creation of the Automated Clearinghouse, or ACH, system to automate check processing because
there's a big cost to processing checks.
That's financial historian Richard Silla, who also says those paper checks were a hassle for banks. They had to go through the Federal Reserve System. There could be delays in getting the payments posted. Online payments eliminated the hassles and saved banks money. So in the 90s, they started signing customers up for online accounts. Silla says it was slow at first.
But after the year 2000, I think the online banking accounts grew by the millions. You know, every year they would add a few million more online bank customers.
So, convenient for consumers, cheaper for banks, everybody's happy, right? Not quite. AutoPay works well for fixed payments, but it can be dangerous for those that fluctuate. If you're hit with an unexpectedly high, say, credit card or utility bill, that can drain your checking account in an instant. Sarah Rathner is with NerdWallet.
If you don't have enough money in your bank account to cover a bill, and AutoPay kicks in and tries to pay the bill, you might be charged an overdraft fee. The median fee is about $34.
And there can be mistakes. Say a once-a-month payment is taken out twice. And yes, it can be hard to keep track of all your auto payments. Wilder estimates she spends $400 to $500 a month on streaming and media, plus auto pays to various charities. Wilder says she'd probably do some auto pay pruning if she genuinely knew what she was spending, but it's not always easy to cancel auto payments. Wilder says her husband shells out $7.99 a month for a video gaming service he hasn't used in about 10 years. He no longer has the email address he used to set it up.
He can't reach a live person. He can't use their website because he doesn't have the email. And so he just gave up, you know.
Turns out this is a pretty common auto pay problem. Common enough that the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, has a whole section on its website on how to stop automatic payments. John McNamara is an assistant director at the CFPB. He says you can file a complaint with the agency about any problem you're having with auto pay. The CFPB has significant power over financial institutions.
Some of those entities might be subject to our supervision, such as large banks. And then when it comes to consumer financial law, many of these areas could be subject to an enforcement action by the CFPB.
Something that would get their attention, like a fine. McNamara says you do have the legal right to stop auto payments anytime, if you can remember who you're paying. I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Justin was talking a little while ago about the macro story on what's driving food prices higher, but there is a micro story too. People, farmers in this case, deciding when and why to reprint the price tags on their produce. Here is today's installment of our series, My Economy.
My name is Scott Snare. I own Rainbow Island Produce. We're a hydroponic lettuce and greens farm in Hilo, Hawaii. I purchased the business in the last quarter of 2019. All the customers really were the local restaurants. So it was a lot of wholesale accounts. So I had only a full quarter before we started to see a reduction in travel. Man, there was a fall off a cliff I can't even put into numbers, or at least I don't like to look at those numbers. There were a couple times where it really seemed like things were coming back. The sales might rebound a little bit and I'd plant a bunch more, and then the next week they would fall off, but I've already got my farm planted out.
Even before I owned it, I knew that the product was undervalued. I ended up deciding to raise prices, and that just coincidentally came about a month before we started locking things down. The initial benefit was it allowed me to hire an employee. That was huge as far as it helped, you know, eliminated some little errors, being behind schedule and stuff. You know, if I hadn't raised prices, I would not have been able to support the employee or probably even myself. It's so hard to tell if we're just in another boom that's going to bust. You know, it does feel like this most recent recovery is a little more promising. So I guess all I can do is hope for continued progress towards, more consistent and improving financial outlook for Hawaii Island.
That was Scott Snare in Hilo, Hawaii. You know, this series only works with help from listeners like you and like Scott. Tell us about your economy, would you? You can do it at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, in which if you need a ride to get to your vaccine shot, Uber and Lyft will do it for you for nothing. Starting sometime in the next 2 weeks, continuing through July 4th, rides to and from vaccination sites will be gratis. Yes, they had been discounted for a while already. And yes, it is a great public service. Also, yes, and cynically, it's a great way to get people back to using the service that you offer with your ride-sharing company after a year of not using it. All right, we got to go. Here is your moment of economic context. Comes to us via the housing market and the National Association of Realtors. Median home prices in the first quarter of this year, the group says, were higher in almost all of the cities it surveyed, 182 of 183 cities, to be precise. And here's why I mention it. In 90% of those cities, prices were more than 10% higher year on year. And that is a lot. Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Siobhan Brett, Janet Wynn, and Catherine Wiles. Sarah Nieves is our executive director of On Demand. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.